All right, everybody.
Welcome, everybody, to the show Life's a Banquet, the show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible.
Starring your hosts, me, Brenton Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about ostriches, wine, and dough.
I'm drunk.
Always. Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, banquet. Once I got a taste of the poke, I'm ready, and it's August, everybody. Welcome to Life's a Banquet.
I'm from Wisconsin.
It's real.
I'm the real deal. I'm not trying to
prove it.
I'm not trying to squeeze my own accordion here. I'm just trying to say, welcome to Life's a Banquet, the podcast about the highs and lows of everything that's edible, spreadable, and
horrible.
Starring your host, restaurant, former restaurant owners and cooks and food lovers galore, Bretton Scott and
Zara Tangora.
All right, listen, it is Friday and it is August, and I'm starting to hear that old tune in New York City, and everybody
what
says,
is it?
Oh, I can't believe summer has once again come and it's already the end of August.
It's not over.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
It's over. Over.
Let me tell you something. I had my air conditioner, and I know this because of the bill I'm still paying off, going on all through October last year.
Yeah.
And before that, there was a tropical heat wave in October.
Do you remember this past winter when it was February and we went upstate and it was 80 degrees? So don't tell me when. I'll tell you when summer's over, everyone else.
We drove up to Martha Stewart's farm and we just were, you know, as a casual.
As
thing.
One does and on a as Wednesday. One does,
yeah. Before they go to court for a speeding ticket in upstate New York.
Hey, life's a banquet.
No worries. Listen, that was a fabulous day, and you're right. It can be anything at any time. But September, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful months.
I love it.
One of the most beautiful months. And not only that, but it is prime. This is harvest season, folks.
I mean,
we are a lifestyle food and beverage podcast, and there, in my opinion, could be no better time than in August and September in the East Coast.
Well, as you were saying, I like September too, though, because then you start to get the chill thing about September is you also get, you don't only have tomatoes, but you get like squash.
Yep.
And then you have like everything all at once. And it's like this cornucopia.
There's even probably some small stone fruits left over, right?
Absolutely.
The plum preserves that you just made 2 weeks ago that you'll have in another month. You're like, oh, thank God I preserved those plums.
Teensy weensy, methly plums, and pear tail eggplants.
I wanted to start this episode, which is episode lucky number
13.
Yay. Okay.
Hey,
thanks to all of the...
Watch out behind you!
Oh my God!
Oh my God! There's a killer!
Oh my God, I just went through I was actually riding... This is a true story, everybody. True story here in New York City. I was riding my bike. Preston and I were riding our bikes, and this cat jumped out from a car, a black cat, middle of the day, and he looked at us and kind of like hesitated on his ground. You know, he like put his paws down and looked at us, and I said, don't you dare... I was like, don't you dare cross our paths, black cat.
And
that black cat turned around, and he went back into the car. And I was like, exactly. I was like, watch out. I am a kitty whisperer. Don't. I looked at him in his eyes. I was like.
Don't step to me.
Yeah.
Good. You showed him his boss.
Go ahead. Yes.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your week. What's been going on?
Many things.
What have you cooked?
Well, I am very into plums right now.
Okay.
I mean, plum season is abound.
Yeah.
So what I did was I wanted to make some plum sorbet, but I'm waiting until this week because I kind of like the plums have been, I think they're in full season, but they go real quick.
Can I be honest with you and tell you something?
Yeah.
I love plums. They're my second favorite stone fruit.
Okay. All right.
Just let me finish.
Okay.
Just let me finish before you judge me. I haven't had a plum this year. That's all. Yeah.
I have one.
I would love to have a bite of it.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, perfect. Every now and then I plumb around.
Okay, so I'm so sorry. I had to run to the kitchen tonight. To grab a plum. So listen, I went to this the corner farmer's market here in Fort Greene, and they had a lot of plums. This is a standard black plum. Now look at, first of all, hold on. Let's take a look.
Gorgeous interior of that plum.
Plums are, this is why plums are the best fruit. And the Japanese know this long before the Chinese and Japanese. Right. So it's, it looks like a sunset.
Oh my God.
Listen, the best thing about plums is the tart. Wow.
That plum is perfectly chilled.
It's a chilled plum. Now it is,
Give me more of that plum.
6 days old.
Really?
Still held up. But you
it doesn't
get that.
Feel like a day after 3 days old.
Yeah. And here's the other best thing about plums is when you're cooking with them, we're all like, when you're cooking with them, you don't have to take the skins off because that's the best part. That's what gives them the color.
Yeah,
and they kind of dissolve when you cook with them.
You know what else I love, Breton?
Oh my God.
Save. A prune.
Well, you take the, you take
don't have
the
to be
plum, you dry it out. Then you get a prune on the shelf.
You don't have to be an old crotchety old lady or a curmudgeon-y old man to enjoy a plum.
No. In fact,
I mean, a prune. Prunes just got, I think prunes got a bad rap. They have a bad name. For some reason, we associate prunes with constipation.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they're a vivacious, delicious, bright. Watch it. After this podcast, prunes. It's going to trend.
Prunes is going to pop.
Yeah, someone's probably going to open a restaurant called Prune, I bet.
A restaurant called Prune? I don't know. That sounds like a funny name.
I mean, maybe someday. You never know the kids these days, right?
Mm-hmm. So, plums, prunes, yeah, they're fabulous.
I made something that I was very proud of. I made a scorpion bowl, which for anyone out there who doesn't know what a scorpion bowl
is. A scorpion bowl?
It doesn't actually include any live scorpions yet.
Oh, okay.
It could. Mine didn't have any. So, it's basically just like a massive tiki drink for a group, and
I made mine
with a watermelon shiso, fresh watermelon shiso juice. Just
you know what? If you go on the Instagram, Zara posted a little story.
I did.
We're keeping up with the times.
Yeah,
moving stories, moving pictures,
which move out within 24 hours, so it's not there anymore.
Okay, but, well you missed it.
Too late.
Too
Bye.
Late. Sorry. Maybe next year if you're lucky.
Yeah, maybe next summer. So anyway, it was really great, and I made like a shiso watermelon juice. I mixed it with some gin, Aperol, and soda water. Actually. Correction, rum, Aperol, and soda water.
That sounds wonderful.
And lime juice. And I just like decorated with all this like snazzy shit I had in my house. I put fucking candles in there, birthday candles.
Hey, watch the swear words. There's kids around.
I put some fucking candles in that thing.
You know what? All right. She's passionate. It's authentic.
I fucking put a candle. Anyway, it was really fun. And so
over the top.
Really, really fun stuff to do. Easy. You can do it with a cantaloupe. You know, if you don't have a melon to use as your vessel, you could use a bowl. I don't know. Get creative, people. Look it up online. Scorpion bowls. They're
scorpion
super fun.
Bowl.
But that's a fun thing to do for a party. Like if you're like, oh, I don't know what to do for my party. I don't have the right this or the right that. Well, you know what? Go get yourself a watermelon.
You know,
I
got a watermelon last week,
uh-huh.
and I carried it through the rain. It started storming. It was a very, very dramatic story. I had forgotten to get the watermelon, and I went back, you know, got some cash out of the ATM. Mm-hmm. It was an $8 watermelon, but worth every penny. Seedless sugar baby.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it did have the cutest little coil on the top, like a little sprig of baby hair.
Like a little pigtail.
Oh, like a little pigtail.
Oh,
so
hey,
I ran to
buddy.
The farmer's market and I said, what's your best, you know, give me your best watermelon. And there was two guys there and he said, well, you know, if you really kind of slap it and it makes a nice thumping sound.
Oh yeah.
And so then this
that.
Guy, this large guy, one of the guys that was helping, you know, transport all the crates of watermelon.
Yeah.
He goes and he starts slapping it. He's
oh
like,
my
boom,
God.
Boom. Like, and I was like, oh, and he's like, is that one? And he's like, oh, let me slap it for you. And I was like, oh, yeah,
oh,
slap that melon. And it was kind of funny. We had a moment. And then.
Then what happened?
Well, so that's. I have an idea for a new kind of porno. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Okay, perfect.
That's on a separate podcast. Oh, my God. I nearly cut my fingers off with that plum.
Jesus Christ, Brenton.
And I walk out holding that 10-pound watermelon like a baby, and it starts pouring like a summer rainstorm.
How cinematic.
It's so cinematic. And I was like, watch me, everybody. I don't need an umbrella. I am, like, I'm going to have my, like, walking in a watermelon moment. And just, I carried through proud, and I was like, everybody's like, oh, like, run, it's rain, like... And I walked through and I got soaked. And it was fabulous. And
That's amazing.
Anyway, so that watermelon, I'm going to stick a bottle of vodka in it tonight.
Well, you know what the thing is with sticking a bottle of vodka in a watermelon?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm from Long Island, as I have to mention
this is your specialty.
Often as possible. This is what we do. We
learned, invented it.
Exactly. We invented it. We've crafted it. We perfected it. Everybody learns to make one at like age 3.
Mm-hmm. It's your first.
Exactly.
Like, in kindergarten.
Okay, here now, A,
all right,
B,
he's
supposed
C. to kind of say when mommy... I can't.
Don't fucking even try, all right?
All right, then you do it.
So listen, this is what you do. You're going to take a hole, you're going to cut in the watermelon, you're going to stick the vodka bottle in it. However, this is the mm-hmm. issue. A watermelon is already full.
Yeah.
It's already full of watermelon.
Well, it is, but that water transfers, and right?
No, you have to drain out
oh my God.
The watermelon juice.
I've never done that.
Yeah, because think about it. Where is it going to go? The watermelon shell is full of watermelon meat and matter.
I feel you know what, I'm embarrassed for myself.
Well, don't
I don't
be.
I know I'm not.
Listen,
I'm not.
You're not from Long Island. You're from a classier place. I guess if I asked how to make a brandy old fashioned.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
or fry up a batch of
I'd
cheese
be like,
curds.
Yeah, I'd be like, what's squirt?
Yeah, or exactly. Friday fish fry. Let me show you. Oh my God, Friday fish fry.
Oh, should we fry some fish tonight? Oh, you got to go to work.
I work, but you know what? Those jobs get in the way. But you know what I can do?
What?
Is we can just talk about a fabulous fish fry.
Yes.
And have you had a good one this summer?
Has anyone out there had experience with frying fish? We would like to know about your fresh frying.
Fresh
frying. And fish frying.
Yeah, you know, we got 2 emails last week. Thank you very much.
We did.
Yeah, it was awesome. So thank you. And I responded to those. So it was exciting. I was like, our first 2 emails.
Cool. Was one from Tom from MySpace?
Tom from MySpace. And the other one was from Google Admin. It was really
that's
cool.
That's amazing. What did they have to
he
say?
He just said, welcome to the team. And I said, amazing. Here's my watermelon recipe.
You're
no, just kidding.
People, but you gave him the wrong recipe. Now Tom from MySpace is at home, like, just pulling his hair out because he can't get all the vodka into the watermelon because you
no,
gave him the wrong recipe.
No, but seriously, if anybody has a good... I'm telling you, if anybody knows this and you're listening and you have a good plum recipe because...
A plum recipe or a fish fry recipe.
That number one most downloaded and I guess looked at recipe in the New York Times in that cookbook was their plum... I think it's like a plum kuchen or something or a plum tort. A plum kuchen.
You're
or a
plum.
Toit.
You listen, I got to tell you, if you were going to be one dessert food, you would be a plum kuchen.
Oh my God, my spirit.
You ooze kuchen. Yeah.
You guys, my spirit food is plum kuchen. I figured it out. That is seriously, everybody, I want you to hashtag plum kuchen from now on. Okay, so what else? What else have you made?
Oh, Madonna Mia. Well, actually, I made a really delicious dinner for my family last week. So I was an only child for a long time. Mm-hmm. This is a long story. Maybe if you get to know me, I'll tell you how one is an only child and then isn't without having a little brother or sister.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so...
And it's not an immaculate conception.
It is not.
Let's keep that
clear.
For
most of my life, I was an only child. So my cousin Rory is really like my brother. We're very, very close. And so him and his beautiful wife, Agiram, came over for dinner the other night on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like in full-time like summer mode. Like I just want to cook everything. But as I've mentioned on the show before, I don't really cook for myself. So I really relish in the times. No pun intended. Relish.
Speaking of a relish tray.
So I really relish, wink, wink, at the times when I get to have people over for dinner and cook. So we try to do Sunday dinner most weeks.
Very traditional, an Italian-American, right?
Sunday dinner. And I'm always like, oh, I'm going to make Thai or I'm going to make Indian or I'll do something like whatever. But I always end up making pasta. So this week I made amazing. I was very inspired actually by the latest Bon Appetit. They had a whole section on recipes for like cold proteins.
Yes, I
it was nice.
Through that, yeah.
I really like that. I always have. And so I made a cold roast leg of lamb,
mm-hmm.
which
that sounds wonderful,
delicious. I went to Paisano's, of course, on Smith Street for the beautiful boneless leg of lamb.
Mm-hmm.
I roasted that. I let it kind of sit. It wasn't freezing cold. It was just kind of room temp.
How long did you roast? Did you do a nice slow roast?
I did a slow roast. Yeah, at about 300 degrees. For it wasn't a huge piece of meat. It was maybe a 3-pound piece of meat. I think I must have roasted it for about an hour.
Okay.
It was great. It was really delicious. So tender and juicy. And then I made lemon spaghetti, which if you guys out there don't know the secrets of spaghetti.
Spaghetti al limone.
Beautiful. So fresh pasta, fresh made spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
pasta water, lots of butter, lemon zest, lemon juice, black pepper, and lots of pecorino.
It's almost
cheese.
Like you're doing a little mini kind of like Bourmonte.
Yes, absolutely.
That's actually what you're making. You're just making a little sauce emulsification.
Yeah. Mounted.
Mounted.
Mount the butter. You know what? I've come to realize, like, sidebar from this conversation about food. I don't know what's wrong with me. Why everything that we talk about on this podcast and in life that's remotely sexual, like, just makes me chuckle like a little tiny schoolboy.
Well, first of all, it's not our fault. It's Nigella Lawson's fault.
That's true.
She's like, and just put this in here, darling. And if you simply lick this, you lick the caramel from the thing.
But I've been noticing it a lot more lately as I listen to our podcast because I'm reminded of things that I say. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Zara, like, get it together. Mm. You know, every time you hear the word like lick or like stick or a hole, you don't have to start like freaking the fuck out. So anyway,
it is something else.
I made spaghetti.
New kids these days.
I know.
Just dirty minds, dirty minds.
And then I made one other thing. Oh, I made a beautiful, I got burrata and I just roasted some heirloom tomatoes and made like a quick heirloom tomato sauce and poured it over burrata. Mm,
you know what? This is a really good time of year to get fresh mozzarella. Mm. Obviously, I don't have to tell everybody like heirloom tomatoes and cheese. But I will say when I went to, what's it called?
The Palos?
Caputo's.
Caputo's.
I got some really, really fresh mozzarella from Caputo's.
How'd you like it?
On Saturday, I went to the counter, and I did get some caciocavallo, of course. Mm-hmm. I told you I was going to get that. And it's this great, Caputo's is this really wonderful Italian deli, and, you know, I think I've talked about
it
before.
We recommend it, like, basically every episode.
We talk, that's all we do is talk about it.
Yeah, because all we do is eat.
But the guy
cheese.
Comes out, I wasn't going to get any mozzarella, but the guy comes from the back kitchen carrying the large bucket, white bucket, and he's got the white, you know, the white hat and the white shirt. It's the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
And he pulled out warm, freshly stretched mozzarella, and he hands one to me, and he puts it in a core container, and it was so warm.
It mushes into the core container.
That it mushes into the core container, and I got it home. And sliced it with, I sliced it and I punched myself. and then I slightly asphyxiated myself while I ate that mozzarella.
Okay.
Oh my God, it's turning into a... Okay.
I know. See, we can't help ourselves.
All right.
But so, that stuff is real good. And like any kind of... you know what else I really like? Stone fruit is great with fresh cheese.
You know what? Stone fruit's good. Do you know what else is good with? Roasted, like a roasted chicken... With a peach sauce or plum, right?
Oh, my God.
Like, remember that one? Zara did a really wonderful... Remember that plum glaze you did?
Yeah. That was one of the first times we bonded, I think.
I did. I was like, who are you? Yeah. Why would you do that?
You're like, what's this?
I had a bunch of people that copied that. That I've never heard.
Really?
It's
very... Like, for anyone out there listening who doesn't know Breton, I will tell you a little bit about him. He is the most... I want to find the right way of saying this.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting.
You have really excellent taste, and so you have a very discerning palate, and everything that you eat, you can kind of pinpoint exactly what's in it and what you like and don't like about it. But so to please you, to make something that you really think is like delicious and extraordinary is probably one of like life's top
when it's good,
accomplishments.
It's good.
Yeah.
When it's good, it's good. And you're right.
Wasn't that the nicest way of saying what?
Yeah. As Martha
describing
Stewart
you?
Would say, well, it's not that you're a horrible complainer. It's just that you have a discerning palate. But
you're just not good at being not complaining.
I'll tell you a little story. When I was a kid, story time, story time,
story
la, la, la,
time.
The story time. When I was a little kid, my mom used to make birthday cakes for me, and she used... This was the night... You know, I was born in 77, so imagine... Picture this.
Picture it.
Wisconsin, mid-80s.
Oh, no.
Driving long...
So many mullets.
Yeah, so many mullets. Lots of short shorts. Dad's had mustaches. Everything was fabulous, right? Like, what... It's what we need to go back to. Anyway, my mom used to make birthday cakes, and she would use a mix... Or she would often sometimes get them from a grocery store, such as Piggly Wiggly, Park and Save, Park and Shop, Stop and Shop, whatever they're called.
Sure. Stop somewhere, shop there also.
And I remember she, at one point, I had my coming of age moment with food. I was probably 7 or 6, who knows? I was 2.
That's very
good. I was like, Mom, is this cake from a grocery store? And I was like, for my birthday? And I threw it in the garbage. And
you can't.
And went to work on my own cake. I was like, oh, if you have to do something right, you have to do it yourself. And it was my first moment where I was like, you know what? I'm going to make myself a fabulous, like, chocolate mocha something or other. I'm sure it wasn't that good, but, you know.
I'm sure it was perfect. And this is actually a great segue into why people should donate to our Patreon page. Because Brenton just keeps making cakes and making cakes and making cakes. And we're going broke and we need some money so we can keep recipe testing so we can make cool cooking videos.
Yeah, and we need to get our website up, which we decided we wanted to get it done right with our branding. And that actually turns out those darn graphic designers are... need to make money too.
Exactly. And in today's, in 2018, we live in an age where other people pay for you to do things.
Yeah, exactly. Outsource, outsource, and Zara.
Outsource.
Yeah, exactly. Which means we do it ourselves. So, yes.
But seriously, even you can donate to our Patreon page for as little as $1
per
month.
And what do listeners get?
Well, listeners right now, so what we're... First of all, right now we have a hilarious video that's up on our page, which you can watch, anyone, even if you don't donate.
It was a one take. We did one take.
It's very funny and silly. What you will get coming up in the next, I guess once we reach a certain amount of money, enough money to kind of start making some stuff, is exclusive content.
Exclusive videos.
Exclusive video content, unaired episodes.
Behind the scenes, me running around naked in an accordion.
Yeah, you get
patch.
To see Bretton's penis and butt.
Yep, exactly.
I'll be fully clothed.
No, this is not true.
that part may or may not
be
true.
That's for if you donate. I would do it for $5,000.
Yeah, $5,000 to see this man's penis and butt.
Watch one day, I'm going to have to like do it, and I'm like, okay, promise. Say what you mean and mean what you say. A promise is a promise.
But no, and then we're going to also be getting some merch, and so.
Merch.
Not too far in the future.
Adorbs merch.
Adorbs merch. You'll get a Life's Banquet tee. And we will. The reason we want to get some money together also via this Patreon page is so we can get merchandise made, bags, totes, have
bags,
you know,
totes, linens, napkins,
toilet paper,
sticks,
toilet seats,
lighters, matchbooks, wooden matchbooks.
Exactly. So anyway, you get the point. Everybody lives in the world. Please donate to our Patreon page and also rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast.
Now listen, go ahead. I want to hear what's going on with your story.
You do? Okay, so. Today's topic, Bretton, is going to be about white bread. And more specifically, it's going to be about the racist history of white bread in this country. I want to start off by saying that I realize that as a white woman in this country, that my place in this conversation is to listen and to learn. And that is what I have tried to do this week while researching this topic. You know, it's very unfortunate that something like bread, which has been around for thousands of years, as we will soon learn, was manipulated during this time and marketed as something divisive and hateful, because really it's a unifier and it's sustenance and nourishment for people around the world, has been and will be. And it was really just manipulated nutritionally and also marketed in a way that promoted hate. And it's disturbing. And we live in times that continue to be disturbing, and in a country where people of color are still persecuted and treated unfairly and unequally. And while this is a food comedy podcast, it is also a podcast about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable. And this is a very deep, deep, dark low in our country's history and in food history. And I felt that I wanted to use my small platform for whoever may be listening to just give our listeners an idea of what's behind something that we all kind of grew up eating. And it's upsetting. I'm sure we will still have a couple of good laughs because we can't help but be silly. But I hope that we all learn something too. And I hope that we all take stock in the injustices we see in the world, whatever they may be to you, individual listener at home, and do what we can to try to make them different or bring awareness and keep learning. And that is our responsibility as white people in this country, one of many. But I believe it is our responsibility to keep our minds open and to keep learning and listening to people who have been treated poorly. And here's the history of white bread. It's not pretty. It's not pretty at all. I also just want to say that the opinions that I am going to express during this story that I'm about to tell you are my own. They are just that. They are opinions for legal reasons. Just want to make it very clear, I'm not saying that any one company is racist or not racist. These are just my opinions based on the reading and research that I've done for this topic. Okay, enjoy. So I want to kind of just talk a little bit about start. I'm going to give you a little information about the origins of bread. Now, to talk all about bread's origins would be an hours long conversation, which we do not time for.
That's on our, exactly. This is for a night out. If you donate $10,000, we'll take you out to some fabulous bar and talk your ear off all night long.
Exactly.
And you'll pay for it. Wait, that sounds
weird. We'll slather you in
we'll
butter.
Pay for it.
Sprinkle you with crunchy sea salt. Okay, so Breton, the earliest known bread was, they think it's from the Natuian hunters and gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
They found, you know, indications of wheat and grain and etchings and
wheat.
And stuff that would lead historians to think that bread was being made by these people 14,000 years ago.
That's many thousands of years.
14,000 years ago. It's really crazy. So
that's a lot of decades.
Yeah, and these kind of artifacts were found in the Black Desert in Jordan. So the Neolithic sites in Turkey and Europe about 9,000 years ago also had some evidence of bread making going on. All of this was happening with what we know in the bread community as a sourdough starter. So what is
Herman.
A sourdough starter? So we were so fortunate to get an interview from Berkshire Mountain Bakery's Richard Bourdin.
Bourdin. Oh my God, I spoke some Dutch with him. I got so embarrassed because I was like, I can speak Dutch. And then I realized that I can't.
Richard is an absolutely amazing, eccentric, wonderful person who's taught some of the most prominent and important bread bakers in this country.
A real wackadoodle star.
How to make bread.
Yep.
And to be in his presence, to get to see his mill in the Berkshires in Massachusetts was beyond an honor.
Mm-hmm.
It was like an experience of a lifetime.
Look what happens if I let the starter go. I don't do anything to it. I don't feed it again. Don't do anything. I just let it get just let it go for like a month.
Yeah.
Right? Well, these bacteria in there, obviously, they do two things, right? They eat and they reproduce, right? And obviously, when they run out of food, they'll just go dormant and wait for the next food. They don't start to, you know, make noise. They just kind of sit there until the next lunch comes around.
Right. So yeah, a sourdough starter, you know, we take yeasts that are found in nature, that are naturally occurring in the room to start it instead of yeast. Again, we would love to talk to you more specifically about yeast and naturally leavened bread and fermentation. That will be another episode. We're on a path to something else. But, you know, this is for thousands. The point is, for thousands and thousands of years, this is how people were making bread, really up until the mid 19th century. And naturally fermented bread is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't ferment, right, I do this here. I let the seed sprout.
Okay.
And that's another way of breaking down anti-nutrients.
Right, sprouting.
You tell it to come alive. You know?
Yeah.
It's not coming alive, so it drops all its weapons and everything. It's all going to cooperate to make itself available to become a new plant, right? And then a drought came. I put it in the oven, you know? Put the brakes on it, so, you know?
Yeah.
Shit happens, you know?
Sure.
And then, so I'm going to dry it up now, and then I'm going to mill it into a flour.
So, Pliny the Elder, ever heard of him?
No.
Okay, well, Pliny the Elder was a philosopher in the year 20, he was born in 23 AD, died in 79. So somewhere in the middle of 23 and 79 AD, he talks about how the Gauls, which were a bunch of Celtic people.
Okay.
He quotes, the Gauls used foam skimmed from beer to make a lighter kind of bread. So again,
do you have the gall? Is that, I wonder if that's where it came
can
from.
Can you just imagine the gall?
God, the gall of having bread like that.
Ugh.
Skimming the foam off the thing. Using beer foam. What disgusting. Oh, Neanderthals. That's where gall came from. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, Bren, you're silly. You're so silly.
That's where it came from. That's what...
All right. So I got a lot of my information for this next part from Salon.com and Ranker, two really great articles. So that's just a little history about bread in general. And again, we'd love to get more into telling you about, you know, the deep, rich history of bread. But today's episode really is about white bread.
But there's a great book for that.
There's an app for that. Yes. There is an app for that. It's called the Bread App. Get it or don't. What do I care? Okay. So we're talking about white bread today. And, you know, everybody kind of it evokes a different emotion in a lot of people. For me, if I hear the term white bread, I think I don't eat white bread. I think, you know, I think lame of, white people.
I think of Wonder Bread. I do think of good grilled cheeses.
Yeah, for
sure. You know what else I think of? My brother used to take a piece of Wonder Bread and crumple it into a ball and then form it into a cohesive mass and then chew on it like a, I don't know, like a spitball. It was like a giant spitball. So that's what I think of that.
And then what happened? He swallowed it or spit it out?
I don't remember. It was disgusting.
I'm going to vomit.
Yeah, I blocked out those memories.
Oh my God. Sounds terrible. I've eaten it. If you're sitting there listening to this and you're eating it, that's fine. But I think that not only does it bring up certain things in our minds, and it did a lot to our culture during...
I don't know anything
about
this.
The 1900s. And so... You know, I'm going to tell you where it began, and we all know kind of where it ended up. In people's minds now, I think when you think Wonder Bread, we think low-class bread. I mean, of course, you can have like a nice Pullman loaf.
Of course, yeah.
But if you think Wonder Bread, we think, yeah, ugh, it's like cheap, it's trashy, it's chemically, it's not good.
I think of how flat the peanut butter and jelly sandwich is. It would always soak up all that jelly, and it would be good this...
Yeah, and then if you put it in your, like, okay, so my mom was a single mom growing up, and she was also, well, she was a great mom and continues to be even better now.
Here you go, Bobby. Listen to this.
She didn't necessarily do some of the things that other moms would do. So she would kind of just like give me lunch, like a PB&J, but like thrown in just like randomly in my bag.
A piece of wax paper.
So it would get like, I'd go for like to take it out for lunch and it would be just destroyed.
She was probably trying to save the environment.
Smushed. No. Bobby.
Bobby.
Let's discuss this later in therapy, in group therapy. Yeah. We're going now. Okay. Anyway, enough about Bobby. Until the late 19th century, bread was heavy and dark. So, you know, it was, people were milling grains either in the home or near to their home, bakery. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like...
Wonderful wheats and
exactly.
barley.
It was part of like everyone's home life, though, for the most part, that people would mill flour or buy flour from a mill very close by. And it was a routine. You know, you had the starter. In Italy, they call it the biga.
Yes, the biga.
And you feed it, and it's just, from what I'm collecting from my information here and my reading, is that it just was like a no-brainer that everyone had bread and made it at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made of whole grains, obviously.
First of all, maybe we should start by saying that food, okay, falls in the department of must-do.
Yeah.
Okay, typically all must-dos... I'd rather stay in bed, you know? Like, that's a not must do. I mean, granted, you need to sleep, but must do, so pay your taxes, pay your bills, all your things. You try to do that as efficiently
and
as quickly, and get it out of the way so we go back to tennis or to what we were doing, okay? And then, so you just quickly try to get the stuff that you must do. No, I'm not saying that eating is not enjoyable or should not be enjoyable or tasty, but you do have to remember that it's a must do.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually eating is a very laborious process because you're not just eating something, you're taking it apart. You know, you're taking the car apart into all its individual components so you could pass it through your gut wall and then use it as nutrients, as building material for your machine.
So last week we talked a little bit about a book called The Jungle. If you didn't listen to our hamburger episode, shame on you. But we discussed a book called
The Jungle. Go ahead. The Jungle. Pause right now.
Yep.
Next podcast. Keep it up next.
Pull over to the side of the road. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and listen to the burger episode. It's only an hour and a half long.
Exactly. I listened to it in double time. So it's 45 minutes.
We should just do this in double time. And then when you listen to it in double time, it'll be quadruple time.
Exactly.
I can't talk that fast. So anyway, so last week we discussed Upton Sinclair's famous 1906 novel called The Jungle, in which he depicts the really disgusting conditions in slaughterhouses and Chicago stockyards in the turn of the century. And as a result of that book, the government passed the Pure Food and Drug Act, and people were becoming increasingly disturbed by the thought of just dirt in their food.
Yep.
And so
bad, nasty bacteria,
nasty food. And we talked about last week, like White Castle forming and making these like sterile, clean, pristine fast food restaurants. And so this is kind of where white bread steps in. So people, they start, obviously the Industrial Revolution, which began in the, I believe, mid 1700s and went into the mid 1800s.
Of course, yes.
Then by the 1900s, you have big factories. Like everything is just kind of adding up in place, right? And so they start making white bread. Now, they're marketing it as being clean and safe and white. And, you know, people were also, a xenophobia became attached to this because immigrants were still making bread in bakeries. And
so
it was dark.
It was dirty. Yes,
exactly.
It was gauche.
Correct. So immigrants are making bread with their hands in bakeries, leaving the bread out,
the
which
bread that
we all know is
trying
fine.
To get back to.
Exactly.
Like, right?
The bitter irony of it. And it's dark. It's like either brown bread or black, literally like called black bread
black
from
bread,
like Germans
the Russian,
and Russians.
Of, exactly.
Yeah. And
molasses and
correct.
Seeds.
And people are attributing at this time, they're like super xenophobic. They're like, no, immigrants and people of color.
I didn't know this.
And white bread is, you know, I mean, people at this time, super racist. More people than not are super racist. And white bread is marketed as white and pure and wholesome and clean.
When you're talking about digestion and that, so commercialized bakeries, is that, do you think this is the problem while everybody's going gluten-free because they're just eating bad stuff?
Well, the concept of digestibility has been forgotten a long time ago and replaced with a dollar sign.
And it starts this whole, this is where white bread becomes actually very racially charged. Not everybody was so into this white bread craze, though. Presbyterian minister and health reformer Sylvester Graham, Graham, just saying, 1839, said white bread was a sign of laziness.
What?
And was susceptible to additives like chalk and plaster, which they would put into white bread.
Just to make it extra, that blue, like Regis Philbin blue white teeth.
Yeah, I don't know why they were putting plaster into it.
That is fascinating.
I don't need to know that you could eat plaster and not die, but that was happening. And so he was really against it.
Yeah.
So he
also used asbestos. So
of course.
Go fake. Go
absolutely.
Fake, yeah.
I mean, I'm watching Mad Men. People also used to like smoke and drink whiskey when they were pregnant. They're like, it's good.
Yummy.
It makes the baby tough. So anyway, he was really against it. He puts out this recipe for what he thinks is like a better kind of bread to be making at home. Eventually, it's adapted into the, you guessed it, graham cracker.
The graham cracker. Yeah. And it sounds so, it's funny because people always think graham flour. But is this?
Well, I don't know. I would, I guess, have to save that for the history of the graham cracker.
Yeah, no, I
but
looked
yeah,
at,
graham
I,
flour.
Not to interject, but
no,
I looked up a lot of what graham flour and graham crackers were. And
what'd you find?
Well, the internet is a very scary place. And I
yes, it's full yeah. of full
I am
of atrocities.
Scared. But anyway, I remember in Smitten Kitchen, she had a really nice thing about graham crackers, and she used, I think, regular whole wheat flour or maybe a mix, and she said this tastes more like what you think of a graham cracker.
I was really hoping that when we went away that you were going to have made fresh graham crackers.
Graham crackers?
I asked Preston, I said, can you tell Breton to make some graham crackers?
For s'mores, because we've got a couple weeks left you know, for those nice campfires, and just make some marshmallows. You know, you could probably keep it in the freezer.
Yeah.
Because they go very quickly.
Yes, they do.
It does take seconds. Just very hot.
Yeah.
But I have
just
never...
Just wear a full hazmat suit.
Yeah, just wear a full hazmat suit. And just like... It should only take you about 72 hours
yeah,
to make
yeah, what's that?
Enough.
If 95 yeah. degrees out, no big deal. Just turn your oven on, turn put on a hazmat suit. Bickety bang, you have a couple of homemade marshmallows.
It's good for you.
Okay. But so people are definitely attributing this to race, as I said. They think that because industrialized white bread is made without touching human hands, and since immigrants and people of color are the ones who are generally working in factories, that they're glad that immigrants' hands don't have to touch their food. That's how, that's the level that white people in this time are on, and some of them remain till this day. So, like in 1930, Dr. Woods Hutchinson is quoted as saying, "No race ever ate black bread when it could get white."
Okay.
So this is really like some sick stuff. People were thinking during the turn of the century and into the 1920s that the more processed the bread, the lighter its tone, the higher its status. So again, while now it's considered kind of low class, it became a big status symbol. As we're moving into like the 1930s, a company named Hostess is formed in 1905, but in 1920 it starts making bread, and in 1928 when the slicer is invented.
Oh my gosh, just in 1928?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're kidding me.
Yeah, 1928 when the slicer is invented, they start making sliced white Wonder Bread.
Sliced.
And that's when it really takes off, right? Because like when I think Wonder Bread, white Wonder Bread, I think like 1950s housewives, mm-hmm. like, oh, honey, I brought home the Wonder Bread, you know, that iconic packaging.
I am obsessed with those old videos of behavior and,
yeah.
and etiquette. You can watch them, go on YouTube, and they're just delicious. They're just, the kitchens are fabulous, and there's so many rules.
So many rules, yeah.
I mean, it's just so, we all know this, but it's so funny. Like, oh, and you know, when your husband comes home, make sure to have dinner ready, as he's probably had a stressful day at the office. I mean, this is just pure propaganda.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about what was happening in reality.
Exactly. Your husband's been at the office banging his secretary all day. Make sure that you have chicken a la king ready when he gets home, or he'll beat you.
His three martinis lunch will sure to be turning into a hangover by now, and he'll need something quickly to rejuvenate him back into a state of inebriation. Right? And a little something white to soak up that alcohol.
Make sure it's white.
Exactly. Sounds fabulous.
Yeah. So, you know, during the 1950s and 60s, right, exactly what you're talking about, we have things like Levittown. We have TV dinners that's post-war.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So people are moving away. It's such a trend, and it's, like, classy. And what you do, and like just part of like the 1950s, 60s home, to have things that are packaged, to go to the grocery store and get processed foods, like it's in fashion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
it's
it must have been very exciting to just have this prepared for you. Oh my gosh, we've been working so hard and now it's here and look at this.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, piece of meat wrapped up in plastic.
Yeah. It reminds me of
shiny.
Do you ever go to Disney World?
Yes.
Like, you know, Tomorrowland?
Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
I wonder if they've updated it, right? I wish they kept the original.
We should go. Let's go right now.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Ready? And here we go.
Honestly, if I had a disposable income and I didn't have a ton of work to do today, I'd say, let's go to Disneyland and check it out.
Exactly. We need your Patreon money so that we can have frivolous adventures.
Brandon and I need you to donate to our Patreon page so we can go to Disney World.
If you could just keep working hard in that office, we promise to have a martini waiting for you when you get home with a delicious chicken pot pie with Hostess pie crust. Go.
Okay, so yeah, that's what, you know, everybody knows the kind of iconic imagery of the 1950s and 60s, the housewife, the, you know, two little kiddos, the whitewashed everything.
The patterns, the wallpaper, those gorgeous...
The race riots and people being treated like garbage and segregation and everything, and, you know.
Why do people do that? I'm so sad.
That's an entire new podcast of its own.
That's
why are white people racist? A gentleman, Theodore Roszak, who was an academic professor, wrote a book called The Making of Counterculture. So in the 60s, as we all know, there's like he coined the phrase counterculture, but a counterculture movement of people wanting to, you know, obviously there's hippies and beatniks, and there's people who are against the war as you get into the late 60s, and you know, this is all kind of a movement against and away from what we're seeing in the 50s and early 60s, white bread, packaged everything. And a lot of people are very outraged about what's going on with segregation and, you know, racism. Obviously, more people than not are fine with it, unfortunately. He's quoted as saying, white bread was the perfect metaphor for the reign and experts and technocrats who, for the sake of efficiency and order, threatened to rob us of all effort, thought, and independence. Only in America could people want their food bleached, all to match the bleached-out morality of white supremacy. And so people are now starting to shift away from thinking that white bread is great. Obviously, there's some folks, but it's definitely losing its status as some kind of, like, you know, symbol of wealth high-end lifestyle. People start making bread. There starts to be, a trend towards healthy eating and food reformers. And 1960s and 70s, food reformers pushed back against industrialized food, and food choices became a key player in political activism. So there was, like, as you remember, I'm sure, there's sit-in, not remember because you were alive, although perhaps you are. How old are you?
I'm 84. It's okay. Did you ever read that book, A Picture of Dorian Gray? Exactly.
Yes, I have.
I'm actually 102.
Amazing. I would, if you told me that you were 102, I would be so excited.
Somebody believed that I was 50 the other day.
It was my
mom.
Which
is not, yeah, I mean.
It was Bobby.
50 and fabulous.
Yeah, 50 right? and doing it. If you were 50 years old, I would need to like drink your blood and find out your secret because you
exactly.
look amazing.
I'm almost there.
So in the 1960s, civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King and others, encouraged people to do sit-ins at restaurants. So food is playing a part in political activism, boycotts, and political fasts. So what I wanted to talk about in this episode was really trying to illuminate how a certain type of food product became such a racist kind of iconography.
I mean, it. I will no longer eat a beef taco bowl ever again.
I mean, of course. But, you know, I don't know. It's just really, it's really upsetting, you know, to just mm-hmm. think of like that we could have taken something that's as honest and as part of life itself as mm-hmm. bread, as we've noted, like we've found bread being made, you know, almost 12,000 years ago.
And I mean, Muslims say bread is God, right?
It's, right.
It's
yeah.
the most
I mean,
Catholic, then, like the bread, right?
Right. And then, you know,
the body of Christ.
Well, interesting that you bring that up because I actually wanted to talk about breaking bread, which I'm not a, you know, person who knows very much about religion at mm-hmm. all. But breaking bread, right, was when Christ was at the Last Supper. That was a thing, right? And then he broke off
well,
the bread and said, this is my body, and that's what the Eucharist is about.
Exactly. Now, if you just look over up here, up on the top, I have a fabulous...
Oh yeah! There's
I have
the Last
a picture
Supper right
of the
there.
Last Supper. It's glooming over, glooming. Sorry, looming over. Sorry,
blooming. Maybe blooming, we should say
blooming over my living room, and it really is interesting. But you know, I would suppose you could look at that literally as a Bible story. You could say, you know, what meaning that has. You know, sharing.
Well, yeah,
respecting
sharing. You know, to share. A meal or to share food or to just share yourself with someone who it's a peace offering, right? It's an olive mm-hmm. branch to sit and break bread. Now we know to mean to, you know, even if you're not a religious person, but to just kind of find common ground with someone.
I'm kind of looking at this picture right now and it looks like Jesus cooked a fabulous meal and he's looking at everybody like, oh my God.
Look can you
at,
believe what I made?
Can you believe?
Look at lemon spaghetti.
Have you seen these oysters? He has his hands open. He's like, look at those plums, kids. I think like, he's a quince.
Oh, is that a cold roast leg of lamb in the corner?
Yeah, look. Have you seen the fish that I pulled out from the ocean?
And the loaves.
It is Friday and we are, this is the best fish fry I've ever made. I guarantee you he was thinking that. I know he was.
Oh, Jesus. So anyway, yeah, I think just, you know, for us to think about, you mm-hmm. know, break the what we're talking about, like breaking bread.
Yes.
Sharing common ground with people. There's something.
It's just, it's incredible how they took, well, it's I not know. Incredible. Of course, I'm aware of what happens in humanity, but how, yeah, they took something and then turned it against us.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
Yeah. So, you know, there's someone in my reading, it said, if a person eats alone, he doesn't need to break bread, right? It was just a description. It wasn't like a quote. It was just describing like, well, if a person eats alone, then they don't need to break bread. But if they eat bread with other people, then they need to break it. And it just caused me to think about like isolation of how we are nowadays. You know, we're like closed off and I want to stay in my group. And we've always been, people have always been that way. But when you actually branch out and you know what I mean? If you have the need to break bread, it means you're not alone. And that's a good thing.
To grow grains, that means that you're going to be doing a monocrop now. That's very against nature, okay?
Yep.
Nature does not have mono anything. It has multiple everything.
Right. Another interesting thing that I found, a common phrase that I didn't really know what it meant, was bread and circuses.
Mm-hmm.
Originated by a Roman poet, Juvenes in the first century AD, was to generate public approval and political approval, but not by excellence, but instead by diversion or distraction, which obviously we can relate to in these modern times, mm-hmm. bread and circuses in this current political climate.
Are you saying that we're living in a live Barnum and Bailey circus?
Yeah,
except
pretty
that
much.
With the animals are...
The animals all work in the White House.
Oh, how interesting.
So last week I had the privilege of seeing the new Spike Lee movie, Who Lives Across the Street, from where we're recording right now.
Yeah, not name dropping.
The Black Klansman.
Just stating the obvious.
It was a really excellent film. It was amazing. And I think everyone should do themselves a favor and see it. That you leave with a lot to think about. And, you know, we live in very complicated times. And it's interesting, the juxtaposition, seeing how a lot has, unfortunately, hasn't changed. It was a very inclusive film. It was very, like... you know, it was very heartfelt and warm and dear and tender. And it was also last week, the 1 year anniversary of the awful tragedy that happened. The acts of American terrorism in Charlottesville and Heather Hare's, really unfortunate, untimely death. So this all tied together. I know that's like serious, but it all tied together for me because, you know, Brett and I had discussed doing a bread episode, and then we're like, oh, maybe we could like talk about white bread. And I thought there was going to be some like really like funny history, like, oh, the white, you know, the white brothers formed white bread. And
I was just going to talk about yeast and Fleischmann's yeast. And oh, well, then they figured it out. And then we started making nice bread, and then it was easier. And then we sliced it and diced it.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is this actually is a gross part of our
history.
There
were some cobwebs under there,
right? It's a gross part of our history.
Exactly.
For multiple reasons. One, moving away from pure, good, nutritious food, which is like made at home and made by local artisans, which now is obviously a coveted thing. We pay $15 a loaf sometimes.
Well, no wonder everybody became sensitive to gluten as well with all that.
Absolutely.
All the chemicals we've been shoving.
That's such a good point. Yeah.
Not that I'm trying to like, it turns an nutrition podcast, but.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
When you think about it.
Totally. And then also because it just became, you know, like fuel to a really awful, disgusting, racist fire that, you know, just kept promoted that some kind of food is better because it's white. And I mean, that was just one of so many awful things that was and continues to just be part of our mainstream, like, you know, culture and moving in the wrong direction. Hopefully, you know, I know now that most people in this country move on the other side, but still it came into this kind of perfect circle in my head after seeing that film and being the anniversary of Charlottesville and just wanting to, you know, I don't know. White bread. Yuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like a white Pullman loaf.
Well, a Pullman loaf is good. Yeah. You know, it's
I know,
just,
you know what I mean?
The thing is,
now I don't want to sound like I'm going to feel guilty every time I have a baguette.
No, it's just,
I recommend a Pullman loaf.
I recommend.
If you're going to have.
You have to say something nice.
Yes.
Recommend a Pullman loaf.
If you're thinking about, if you do, just try a Pullman loaf and enjoy the beauty of what that is. Those natural flowers, they're supposed to be better for you. I don't know.
So that is kind of in conclusion, the history thus far of white bread, what it means in pop culture, what it means in race in this country, and what it means in your tummy and in our minds. And it's pretty sordid and weird. And it obviously had its heyday, and now it's down on its ass, and I can't necessarily foresee it.
Okay, I don't want to sound weird, but I was just thinking about making fried fish.
Yeah.
And then I thought of panko breadcrumbs and everything now is, you know, like bread and panko, and that's white bread. Should we not? Is that, it's Japanese white bread.
Oh, well.
So I don't know.
That's a whole other podcast.
Well, I know, but now I'm thinking, is that made in the same way?
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure it's not made in a...
But
I mean, panko breadcrumbs are delicious.
But
though.
It's different because it's made by Japanese people.
Exactly.
Which I love panko.
There was this, when I was looking up some of this stuff about racist Wonder Bread, well, also they were just sued in like the 80s or even maybe later. Maybe actually it was like the 90s, I think, for unfair treatment of black workers. It was a big lawsuit.
The message that I'm getting is we should not be buying Wonder Bread.
No. And then they also... You guys can Google this, had an actual package of bread that was like marketed for kids. And it said for smart white kids on the package.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I need to.
How does that get through like a whole chain of marketing people? No one looks at it. It's like, this doesn't look good.
Yeah. I mean, that's something.
They're like, nope, send it to press.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's the history of white bread. But I do want to also talk just a little bit about favorite breads in general.
Mm-hmm.
So for top three this week, what are your top three favorite bakeries to get delicious, beautiful bread?
In New York?
No, it can be anywhere. I'm sure one of them is going to be in Wisconsin.
Well,
I know you.
No, that's the thing. This is a really tough call because it could go something. I could talk about the world.
You can talk about
anywhere.
You know
what? I'm going to tell you. Okay. I do love Grand Daisy Bakery. over up in, what is that, in Tribeca?
I've never been there.
It's really good. It used to be part of Sullivan Street Bakery. Apparently,
which is
they
amazing.
Split off, and I don't know if that was the original owner. I don't know the whole story. And you know, I still love Amy's bread.
Oh, yeah.
I still love Amy's bread. And then, I don't know, let's see, a third one? What's a third one?
Well, it's one of those things where there's so many.
I mean,
it's
I could say Caputo's. I love the lard bread. We've talked about that before. I mean, there's so many different cuts. If I'm talking about like a naturally loving, what's the one we went up in? Bonfilio?
That's my number one favorite.
Bonfilio is up in, it used to be in Hudson.
It's in Athens now.
Athens.
It's the best.
New York. And it is.
It is the best divine. That I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm sorry. How can I not say because my new favorite bread, because I never had it before, which is why I'm shocked that I just didn't say this, is Berkshire Mountain Bakery's bread. No joke. I'm not plugging it. Swear to the Lord.
Yeah.
Heavenly above everything. Everything that is holy in this world. That, that bread.
It's the best.
That sesame fabulous whole wheat was the most delicious thing I've ever had in my entire life.
It's amazing. And also, Richard is just a genius, and he's brilliant. He's been kind enough to just kind of tell us about, you know, the process and why and how, you know.
Like if I had a cooking school, I would first study digestion, gut, how it works, what we need, understand that part, then make foods from there. Mm-hmm. And it could still be fun. Yeah. Injera bread is fantastic.
Injera is wonderful.
You know, like the oat cakes are fantastic from the Gaelic people. These are first things. But go backwards a little bit to like think in terms of like what were we like before we knew we were. That's assuming that you're not a creationist, okay? So you go back, well, they're still out there. And then you might be one of them. I don't know. I have no judgment, okay? Although I think, whatever. Yeah. If you go backwards, right, and you think, like, we had to be pretty good looking. We had to be in pretty good shape. We had to be, we were there. We were eating. We were not just lame ducks, you know? We were, like, actually above and beyond possibly than other creatures, but we're still just nature. So that means we followed nature in its way, but with the advent of self-awareness or awareness, whatever you want to call it, where you suddenly can elaborate on something.
I mean, that guy, his mind is out there, and he's a genius. I mean,
he's a genius, and he's taught some of the greats about how to make bread.
It really changed. It kind of pull a cog, you know, my gears started turning, and I started thinking about the vertical farming and his, you know, the aquaponics and using fish to feed your vegetables and the water and recycling water. And that is really, I don't know where to start with that, but I want to look more into that.
Addressing food and we should address everything, even the way we grow it. You know, like growing grains, I'm pretty much done with grains. So, you know, it's like what was once a good thing may not be such a good thing anymore. You know, to grow things horizontally doesn't make any more sense, okay?
Right.
To grow things with dirt actually is starting to be looking less and less appealing if you look at what we need to disturb. And there's many ways. I'm a big fan of, like, aquaponics.
Oh, yeah.
Use fish poop. I love fish poop.
You do?
That's what Stacy's getting into.
And I want to build, like, a 10,000-foot dome. And inside we would have aquaponics. And I would cold smoke some trouts, and you know, that should do well.
Yeah. See, you are making this thing.
No, but we need to eat.
Yeah.
So let's make it fun.
I know, he's a genius. My top three favorite breads, I think that my favorite bread of all time is either Berkshire Mountain Bakery or Bonfilio.
Okay.
Bonfilio. She-Wolf Bakery.
She-Wolf is real good.
Really good.
If you want to look really cool in New York City, you walk around with a white bag.
Yeah.
You go to the farmer's market, you get your She-Wolf bakery, and you walk around with it.
Yeah, it's really delicious.
That is hot.
Yeah, that's really good bread.
And delicious.
I guess my favorite Italian bread, I kind of want to toss this into the mix, is actually from Parisi Bakery.
I forgot about Parisi Bakery.
They also make amazing sandwiches.
Is it Elizabeth or Mott?
I can't remember. It's somewhere in Little Italy.
Yeah.
They're like the Lower East Side and Little Italy.
Yeah,
kind
look
of
that
combine. Parisi, P-A-R-I-S-I.
Yeah, I think so.
Their Italian bread is absolutely
to die for. It's
amazing. Their sandwiches are so good. If you want to get an Italian hand job. If you want an Italian hand job, go to Parisi. Tell them Zara and Brenton sent you.
Go to the corner of Chinatown in Little Italy. Go downstairs. It's 69 Mott. Ring the bell and say, "Hi, I've been here before." Go ahead.
And I will say that Roberta's bread is incredible.
Roberta's bread, yep.
And
yep,
shout out to our dear, good, beautiful, wonderful friend, Amelia Hall, who bakes for Roberta's, who started baking the bread at Brucey. I also really love that Brucey bread.
And you know what else I love? Ohrwasher's marble
rye.
Oh my
God, Ohrwasher's
hashtag
is great.
Ohrwasher's, yeah. They will custom make you, yeah. I know they're probably going to be mad, they'll custom make you marble rye because nobody makes marble rye. And I highly recommend you can call them if you live in New York, or maybe you don't, but they make wonderful, and I love marble rye.
Yeah.
It's the cutest bread.
It's the most adorable. Also, this is a good opportunity for everyone to go watch that episode of Seinfeld.
Yep.
That Brenton was on. Listen, where he fights an old lady for marble
that
rye.
That is me disguised as Jerry Seinfeld.
So let's also ask some chef recommends tips this week.
Yes.
Chef recommends.
Okay. Chef recommends getting a really nice loaf of crusty bread, sticking it under your broiler. Perhaps you have a wood burning oven, if you're so fortunate to have one. Taking that bread, toasting it, pulling it out of the toast. You know where I'm going here. Rubbing it with some raw garlic. Tis the season right now. You just said in the beginning that you made that. And and here's what you do. Everybody's been going nuts. Panko tomat is hot, kids. Right? Everybody's got the picture of a magazine, the picture of their Instagram. Let me tell you, I was a foreign exchange student in Spain. I learned to make that from a real Italian grandmother.
You mean Spanish.
What did I say, Italian?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm so silly. A real Spanish grandmother. And it's all good. It's Italian bread. And, you know, you just take that and you just rub the garlic. And it has to be really, really wonderful, you know, garlic that you get from somewhere. It's so important.
Yeah.
And then you grate the tomatoes on a grater.
Oh, that's what you do?
Yeah, you grate the tomatoes on a grater.
I always just rub the tomato on the bread.
I'm sure some people could. I learned to do it that
way.
Yeah,
no, that's so interesting.
You cut, they used to use their Roma, our version of what is like a Roma tomato or Sarmazzano, and you cut it in half lengthwise.
Yeah.
And then so you would take the skin side and you rub it so that your hands protect it. And it's sort of the flesh sort of grates naturally and comes off, and you're left with the peel, which you discard or throw it into your compost bin and give it to your chickens. And then you just spoon that over the bread and then salt it and olive oil it. And it is.
I love panko tomat. For some reason, I've just always like rubbed it right on the bread. I never even thought of grating it. That's so interesting.
Grating it, there is something. Well, first of all, texture. You and I, Zara knows for sure. Texture is everything. And we all should be following that. But texture is something happens in the tomato when you grate it. It's the weirdest
thing. It's
like fluffy. It gets fluffy.
Yeah.
It aerates it or something.
That is a really good thing to do.
What's your chef recommends?
Oh my God. I have so many things I could just recommend to do with bread. Mostly just shove it in your face. I love bread. Bread and butter is my favorite food ever.
Hashtag bread and butter.
Heavenly. Heavenly.
Heavenly.
Well, let's see. I guess my chef recommends for what to do with bread would be, a classic toad in the hole.
Toad in the hole.
A toad in the hole is
fun.
Did
somebody say hole?
My thing obviously includes holes and toads, which I hate. But yeah, a toad in the hole is a really great thing. You know, you pull out the center of the bread and you put some butter in a pan and toast it, and then or olive oil, and then stick an egg in it. It's like an egg sandwich all in one. It's delicious.
Who doesn't love
I love it. It's something I never, ever, 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 ever make or eat because
we should treat ourselves this weekend.
Toads
and
holes.
Everybody make a toad in the hole.
Yeah.
Just do it. Don't even.
A toad in the hole.
Don't think about it.
Is great.
Just start doing it. Just start cutting the bread and be like, whoa, what's happening? I'm making a toad in the hole.
Ooh, a toad's in this hole. My other favorite thing to do with bread that's kind of unconventional, chef recommends. It's conventional to a lot of people. I just think in America, it's not an American recipe. But Ribollita.
Ribollita.
I've mentioned it on the show before that I enjoy Ribollita. I love it.
Ribollita means reboiled.
Yep. And it's a Tuscan bread soup.
Tuscan bread soup.
And it's just
so dang. Give us a quick.
Well, a basic Ribollita that you'd make would always include greens and beans. So some dark greens like Swiss chard or kale. Some cannellini beans.
Get some Rancho Gordo cannellinis.
Exactly. With like a end piece. Like if you have, if you're making bacon and you have like one little nubbin left, maybe a piece of bacon or a little like nub of guanciale, a Parmesan rinds,
carrots.
Do you
know what I've been doing if I don't want to use bacon? I've been using those mushroom powders.
Oh,
to give it that flavor.
Like chaga?
You can get
cordyceps.
Well, I mean, you can get any kind of mushroom powder.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it from Radical Herb Shop. You can
get shiitake,
maitake, shiitake.
Oh,
they
my
have
God.
Turkey tail. They have lion's mane.
Ooh,
and they're affordable.
That's so. I'm gonna go get some on my way home.
They're affordable. You just put a little. You just add a teaspoon of
that's
it.
That's so smart.
Remember, and it just gives it.
Yeah,
the,
it has
like,
that umami flavor.
Yeah. Umami.
Umami. So yeah, celery. I don't know, onions, and you can put tomato if you want. You really can like have fun with it. Do whatever you want, and then you put bread, and the bread dissolves into it, and it's really supposed to be more like a porridge than like a like a liquidy runny soup.
It reminds me of
you can eat it with a fork.
The Spanish version. Well, I don't know if it's the Spanish version, but sopa de ajo.
Oh yeah, sopa de ajo is amazing.
Sopa de ajo.
Oh, sopa de ajo.
It's
ajo.
They also in Spain they call it hangover soup.
Oh wow!
Which I'm sure this time of year you take day old bread and you soak it. And you get
I need like a fridge full of hangover soup.
Wait, where are you from originally?
I'm French Canadian.
French.
Oh, wow, okay.
Where did you grow up?
So where did I grow up? Ottawa.
Okay.
Northwestern Quebec, and then Amsterdam because I lived in Holland for 10 years.
Do you speak Dutch?
Yes, ik spreek Hollands.
Ik spreek een beetje Hollands. Mijn zus woont in Amsterdam. Mijn zus woont in Amsterdam.
Je zus.
Bones. Yeah.
Your
remember.
Sister?
Yeah, yeah.
Your sis, yeah.
Mein Zeus.
Yeah. Mein Zeus sounds like God.
I've been drinking a lot lately. I'm not going to lie. Mom,
I've been really good.
Listen.
Lots of water.
You've been really good?
Hmm?
Okay.
Okay. Eyes of judgment.
Okay.
Okay. Two martinis to me is not drinking.
No, it's true. I mean, I only have like two drinks a night too, but I feel it. And it's consistent.
Guess, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't drink for 4 nights.
Maybe
so
if
fine.
I drank more bread, I'd feel better.
Have a glass of sherry.
I'm just going to have a glass of bread milk.
Just have a cute sherry.
Yeah.
Cute sherry in a bottle of wine. Cute sherry in a bottle of wine. No worries. Okay.
No worries. So have you been any places this week that you really, really like? Maybe even bread focused?
You know what? Besides that bakery, not really. I've been just laying low and eating a lot at home and eating lots of just simple snacks that I've been chomping on, like the watermelon.
Yeah.
And I'm not turning on my oven.
Yeah. Snacking on peppers and green
tomatoes. I'm doing just simple stuff.
Popping like cherry tomatoes and down the old gullet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Glass of water and a spoonful almond butter.
Oh God. Do I love almond butter? Although I'm trying to quit it. I think I'm overdoing it.
Yeah. It's important to diversify.
Yeah. I would like to shout out this week for places I like. One of my favorite restaurants in the city, a friend restaurant, Servos in Chinatown.
Servos, I've heard about it, yes.
It's
I have
really
not been there yet.
Delicious. It's delicious if you like what I would describe as chefy foods. And I don't mean that in a snobby way or in a masculine way. Like chefy foods, like bone marrow and pig's tails. Not like
nose
there's anything.
To tail.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Although
barbecue slabs of barbecue covered in
chef,
barbecue.
Chef food.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's foie gras. No, I don't mean that. I mean
don't
what
me,
actual what I view as people who are chefs and cooks like to eat, which is lots and lots of olive oil.
So everything's served in a pint plastic container and it's
exactly.
chicken and rice.
And you eat it over the garbage with your hands. No. It's it's just like, you know, lots of salt, lots and lots of glugs
simple,
of good olive oil.
Simple, delicious,
food that you want to like, you know. We got these really delicious, delicious grilled shrimp the other night, and they had their shells on. It's like I just started like munching mine with the shell, like stuff like that. You know, things you can eat with your hand.
Yep.
Great bread that you're gonna like mop up tons of like peppery olive oil with. It's a delicious restaurant. It certainly doesn't need my help. It's already very popular, but I will just say that if you are anywhere in the vicinity of New York City, get to Servos and their sister restaurant, Hearts, which we also heart. They're both great places. But yeah, Servos is my shout out this week. I love it there.
Sounds fabulous.
So good.
Well, that being said, I think
let's go get some, shove some white bread balls into our mouth. Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening this week, and please download, rate, review, and subscribe this podcast, and give us your hard-earned money on our Patreon page so we can make t-shirts and videos. We really love you. Please send us some emails. We'll read them on the air. Breton, you're amazing at playing the accordion. I live my life in total awe of you. And have a great weekend. Don't let anybody tell you that summer's over.
Exactly.
It goes on forever and ever in your hearts and minds.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Hasta la pasta.
no practice.
All of our episodes are recorded right here at Studio 54 at the heart of Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Our rock star award-winning sound editor and producer is Christine Farrell. I'm Zara Tangora.
And I'm Breton Scott. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.